Good morning, everyone. It's nice to see such a big crowd on the last day of the conference. I wasn't sure what to expect. So I'm shifting gears a little bit. I'm not at an academic institution, so I'm bringing sort of a nonprofit view to this. And I come from the perspective of helping people who are really interested in targeting the working with teens and young adults on these issues. So we expanded our mission about 4 years ago now to focus not only on teen pregnancy, but also unplanned pregnancy among young adults. And one of I have no financial disclosures. One of our first questions was, sort of, how do we explain these high rates of unintended pregnancy among young adults? And we're really interested in young adults up through the age of 29. For the purposes of this analysis, I focused on those ages 18 to 24, because they have the highest rates of unplanned pregnancy in the US, nearly 1.5 million every year. And I feel like, particularly in teen pregnancy prevention efforts, older teens, those sort of out of high school, are often very overlooked. And so how can we sort of think about expanding our efforts beyond just high school seniors? So obviously many 18 to 24 year olds are not fully protecting themselves from pregnancies. From pregnancy, about 7 out of every 10 pregnancies to unmarried 18 to 24 year olds are unintended, as reported by the woman herself. And so we wanted to look at some of the questions of why might this be? And we realized that money, of course, is an issue, sort of cost of contraception. Another is perhaps they're hearing a lot of things that they're just not sort of that interested in. Another might be access to clinical care or not having a provider that they're comfortable with and sort of going around and around and just trying to find how can they get in and get the methods that they need in a way that's comfortable for them. But we really wanted to focus on this issue of knowledge. And are there knowledge gaps? And do these knowledge gaps, in fact, are they associated with behavior at all? And we had a hunch that knowledge might be part of the issue. And when we started looking around at surveys, we actually didn't find any nationally representative surveys that asked this age cohort about knowledge around sort of sexual and contraceptive issues. So we decided to fund our own. We needed to know if this was just a hairline crack or a large chasm. And we funded the National Survey of Contraceptive and Fertility Knowledge. We competitively bid the process, and it was conducted by the Guttmacher Institute, and Field Research Corporation actually did the sort of actual data collection for us. The sample was unmarried 18 to 29 year old men and women. We had 1,800. It was quite a challenge to find unmarried 18 to 29 year old men and women. It was nationally representative and probabilistic, and it focused on knowledge, attitudes, future expectations, and actual behaviors. And again, it was conducted by Guttmacher. We conducted it over the phone, just a little bit about the methodology. We had a random digit dial. We had a targeted sample of landlines so we could oversample for African American and Hispanic young adults. And we had a random sample of cell phones. And when we originally set up the research, the sample of cell phones was going to be much smaller. But as we were in the field, we realized that we needed to really increase this. I think at the same time that we were collecting this data, a report came out from the CDC about how it was, you know, we collected this in 2008, 2009, sort of end of 2008, beginning of 2009, how with the recession, people were just sort of dropping their landlines like crazy. And the biggest group to drop was the 18 to 29 year olds. So we decided to boost our cell phone sample. And we actually dialed over 100,000 numbers to get these 1,800 interviews. The survey was developed in collaboration with the Guttmacher Institute and the National Campaign. And it was 29 minutes for females and 23 minutes for males. So we had about 900 of each in our sample, so we're able to look at the data by males as well, which is really exciting. You could be called up to 25 times if they knew you were an eligible respondent. So they really were trying. The part of the challenge was just finding the eligible respondents. And again, you were only eligible if you were in this age range and unmarried. They started with a team of all female interviewers, and they added a couple males, but they didn't find any difference in completion by interviewer gender. So just a bit about the 18 to 24-year-olds that I'm focusing on today. A majority are working or are in school or both, so about 30% are working, about a third are in school, and about 1 in 5 are both working and in school. So we sort of see a broad range of where we might find these students. But again, about half are in school of some kind. They're in a variety of living situations, so about almost half, 44%, live with their parents, which I think was really surprising for us. Again, this skews younger, so the 18 to 19-year-olds are even more likely to be living with their parents than those over the age of 20. About 30% live with someone else, like a roommate, 14% live with a partner, and 13% live alone. And I think we had thought that we would see greater levels of people living with a partner, but this sort of matches with other national estimates. Most are sexually active, so 82% have ever had sex, and the vast majority have had sex in the past year. But again, 82% have had sex, so 18% haven't. So there are still some, and this is highest among the 18 to 19-year-olds. About, 56% are in a current sexual relationship. So that is, they're sort of currently having sex with a partner. And we didn't ask about whether or not that was a long-term partner or a short-term partner or anything like that. We just know that they're in a current sexual relationship as defined by them. And most have ever used some kind of contraception, and about two-thirds have used a method in the last month. 18% report that they themselves were involved in a pregnancy that was unplanned. So again, about 1 in 5, so sort of a high familiarity with unplanned pregnancy. And 62% agree that many of their friends have been involved in an unplanned pregnancy. So our goal wasn't to sort of report on or capture data on unplanned pregnancy, but we wanted to get a sense of, is this an issue that's in these young people's lives? And it clearly is. So young adults themselves, about 79% said that it was very important to avoid a pregnancy at this time in their lives. So they were able, the question was, how important is it to you to avoid a pregnancy right now? And you could answer on a Likert scale, very important to not at all important. And about 9% agree that it's somewhat important. So overall, 88% say it's important to avoid pregnancy right now. However, when you look at the sample, about half are not fully protecting themselves from pregnancy. So we were able to break it up into whether or not you're not, and this is just among those who are currently in a sexual relationship and say that they're not pregnant or trying to get pregnant. 20% said they're not using any method of birth control at all, and 26% say that they're using a method inconsistently. We weren't able to ask about inconsistent use of the ring or the patch, but we only had about 0.3% of our sample using those methods. So we're able to, the inconsistent use is late for a depo shot, missing three or more pills, and not using a condom every time. And if you were using a long-acting method, like an IUD or an implant, you're automatically in the consistent use column. And we see that the inconsistent use, not surprisingly, is greater among women because more of them are likely to be reporting hormonal methods of contraception. So even among those who say that it's very important to avoid a pregnancy, they still have a hard time using birth control. We would have expected non-use to be much lower among those who say it's very important to avoid. And 16% report that they're not using anything right now. Again, just among those who are currently sexually active. About a quarter say that they're using something inconsistently, and about 50% say that they're well protected. There was a small group that we weren't able to tell about use of consistency, and mostly it was just the way the questionnaire was worded, sort of how we fed you through the various skip patterns. So one of the questions that we wanted to look at was sort of why might this be? And we included a battery of questions about knowledge. So this was 29 true-false questions about knowledge. And they were divided into questions about condom use, questions about birth control pill use, questions about depo use, questions about other hormonal method use, questions about IUD use, and questions about sort of pregnancy risk more broadly. And before each section, we asked, how much do you think you know about condoms? And so we're able to sort of look at self-perceived knowledge versus actual knowledge as well, which is kind of interesting. But just to walk you through some of the knowledge gaps, 35% said that it's okay to use petroleum jelly as a lubricant when using latex condoms. And this is just among those 18 to 24-year-olds. When we know that is not true, it's more likely to break the condom. 56% said it was false, and 9% said they didn't know. 48% said that women need to take a break from the pill every few years, despite no medical evidence to support this. And 42% said that was false. 20% recognized that birth control can reduce certain types of cancer, and evidence suggests that it is associated with reduction in ovarian cancer. 74% said that was false. And 37% said to obtain an IUD, you must undergo a surgical operation. Even though that's not true. 53% said you had to have a Nuva ring inserted by a doctor every month. So I don't know about you, but I don't think I'd go to the doctor every month to get a ring inserted. It seems like a lot of hassle. And then 47% said the negative effects that a woman have from Depo-Provera can last the rest of her life. So our intention with these knowledge questions weren't to be sort of, gotcha, you don't know anything, but really to sort of think about what kind of knowledge do people know in order to use various contraceptive methods in an effective way. If I'm taking the pill and I think I need to take a break every few years, let's say I found a pill that I really like, I sort of have managed to take it every day, but I think I need to take a break in 2 years, so I stop using it. How can we sort of overcome some of these knowledge gaps? In addition, almost all of the respondents know that a woman is more fertile during certain times of the month, but only about a third can correctly identify that time. So it's good that people know you're more fertile during certain times, but only about a third. And in addition, about one in five say that douching can help prevent pregnancy. We also asked a variety of questions about attitudes, and I think one of the starkest questions that we asked was agreement with the statement, it doesn't matter if you use birth control or not, when it's your time to get pregnant, it will happen. We thought that not that many people would agree with this statement, but we found overall 1 in 5 18 to 24-year-olds strongly agree with the statement that it doesn't matter if you use birth control or not. An additional 1 in 5 somewhat agree with it, for a total of about 4 in 10 overall, ranging from about a third to a half of the population. So if you think you have to take a break anyways, you don't think it's going to work that well, why would you use it as effectively? And at the same time, 86% of young women agree that their friends think birth control is important. So there seems to be some sort of conflicted attitudes around birth control. And this is just focusing on the women. We had a battery of questions, or some questions that were just more for women because we needed to keep the male interview a little bit shorter. 53% of women overall, or aged 18 to 24, said that they know little or nothing about the birth control pill. About 1 in 4 women overall say that they think they have about a 50-50 chance of getting pregnant while on the pill. And about a quarter think that the using birth control pill or other hormonal methods will lead to cancer and that this is highly likely. And half of those women who say it's highly likely say that this will reduce their use of the pill. So we can see that, and you can see that the attitudes and knowledge vary by race, ethnicity slightly. Although overall there are high concerns about particularly this method of birth control. And just a little bit more about attitudes towards birth control in general, I think it's really interesting to look at the male attitudes because we don't have sort of as much data on that. Overall, as I mentioned, 41% think there's a 50% chance of getting pregnant on the pill, 43% of men. And then we asked the statement, do you agree, sort of on a Likert scale, using birth control is morally wrong? And 15% of 18 to 24-year-olds said that they agree with that statement, much higher among men than among women, 18% versus 11%. So we wanted to look at, we know there's a large gaps in knowledge, attitudes around birth control pills are more negative than we originally anticipated. And we wanted to look at whether or not this actually matters for behavior. So there were, as I mentioned, there were 29 questions about various contraceptive methods and pregnancy. And the youth ages 18 to 24 had a mean score of about 17 out of 29 possible points. And one quarter of the respondents answered fewer than half of the knowledge questions correctly. So we grouped these and we said that these people had a knowledge deficit. So then we looked at knowledge. We just did some analyses to look at whether or not knowledge deficit was associated with any behavioral differences. And again, these are preliminary. We haven't controlled for anything yet, but those analyses are in the works. 34% of respondents who are currently sexually active and not seeking a pregnancy had a knowledge deficit and did not use a method of contraception in the last 3 months. Comparatively, 18% of similar respondents who did not have a knowledge deficit did not use contraception in the past 3 months. So if you had a knowledge deficit, you are more likely to report not using a method of birth control. You are also more likely to report, or less likely to report, that it was not at all likely you would have unprotected sex in the next 3 months. So one of our other behavior questions was, how likely is it, do you think, that you'll have unprotected sex in the next 3 months? And 65% of respondents without a knowledge deficit reported that it was not at all likely, compared to 54% of respondents with a knowledge deficit. We also looked at the attitude questions differently, and you can see from this that those who, and this is just the statement I showed you about whether or not you agree, or whether or not you use birth control when it's your time to get pregnant will happen. Among those who agree with that statement, 30% didn't use any method of contraception in the last 3 months, compared to 16% of those who disagree. And 24% who agree with that statement report it is quite or extremely likely they'll have unprotected sex in the next 3 months, compared to 14% of those who disagree. So it seems that knowledge and attitudes are associated with behavior at some level. So sort of moving on, how can we take what we learned from this and develop some types of interventions or apply this to the work that we're doing? Another important piece of the questionnaire was asking where young adults actually get their information. And I will say up front, we also asked about sex education, and the vast majority of young adults said that they had some kind of formal sex education. The mean age was about 15. So for most people, it happens when you're like a sophomore in high school. And we're talking to people, most of the time, they're either seniors in high school or out of high school. And so how can we think about making sure they're still getting information in a way that's relevant to them, that's not necessarily through sex education in a classroom? And most people said that a personal source was where they got their most often, that they got information from in the last year, but it's not necessarily their most trusted source. So a personal source would be like a family member, or a friend, or a boyfriend, or girlfriend. The most trusted source, overwhelmingly, for everyone, every demographic group, was a doctor. So a doctor or a nurse, which we coded as professional. Unfortunately, that's not the source where they get the most information. You can see that while 72% say they trust the doctor the most, only about 29% say they're getting most of their information from the doctor. And about half go to the media for information first, even though you can see that trust for the media is only 11% say that it's their most trusted source. So we've tried to identify some, they're not interventions, but strategies for both providers and using the media, and sort of how can we, a lot of the times we hear, you know, we'll just have providers talk to them about that, we'll have providers talk to them about that, but how can we recognize that provider time is very limited, you don't often get reimbursed for counseling, so how can we give some strategies. So we developed this tips brochure. I have a couple in the back. And it is sort of helping people guide how they might help their clients pick a contraceptive method better. And then we also developed an online virtual support network that is called bedsider.org. It is not yet nationally launched, but we'll be launching that in quarter one of next year. It's being pilot tested right now with Planned Parenthood of the Treasure Coast. So I hope that next year at APHA we can have someone come and talk about all the good stuff we learned from this. But the idea of so one page on the inside, it's a method chooser. You could go, and I might add, these are screenshots, but everything is changing based on sort of feedback we get. So these are sort of, it might not look exactly like this. I know they've changed the way some of the methods look. But it's a picture of all the methods. You can scroll over them, find out. After a lot of testing, people told us that they wanted to know about effectiveness, so how effective are the methods, effort, so what do I have to do to get the method, how hard is it to, like an IUD, requires almost no effort because I can just get it inserted and they don't have to worry about it anymore. A pill I have to take every day. A condom I have to use every time I have sex. And then users told us that it was really important to say whether or not it was easy to hide. So for right now, that's one of the selection criteria. And you can go up there and select, and methods will sort of disappear or fade into the background. We also have a provider search, and we're working with the Office of Population Affairs, Planned Parenthood, NACHO, and anyone else that would like to give us information about their clinics so that we can have a provider search for people that can put in their zip code. We're having reminders. You can actually go online now if you're interested and sign up for refill reminders, appointment reminders, and then if you are taking a method like the pill, you can get a reminder for it every day, or the ring, you can get a reminder every week or every month, so depending on your method of birth control. We also have, let's see, here's an internal page. We just have a ton of information about every method, and so we have videos of women, at least four for every method, filmed in women's homes talking about their use of the method and their experience with it. We have information about sort of quick facts about side effects and more detailed facts if you want. We're really trying to nail down the costs, which vary so much depending on insurance coverage, how it's used, pros and cons, and then what do you do if you have problems with it? You know, how can we, the goal of this, the project, is to support women who are using birth control and help them, if they do have problems, either resolve the problems that they're having with that method, select another method that might work better for them, and to do this in concert with their provider, but to allow them to access this in their own time when maybe they don't have the opportunity to get their provider on the phone immediately, and they can sort of get a little bit more information and then go to their provider. And this is the website. You can check it out. It's sort of in beta testing mode, and you have to log in now. You won't have to log in when we launch it nationally. So some other factors to consider, that's where the national campaign has headed in terms of how do we take the information that we gather from this survey and apply it immediately. We also asked a variety of questions around mistrust of government and pharmaceutical companies, issues around concerns about infertility, and then attitudes towards childbearing and relationships more broadly. And so we're going to be doing additional analyses around that. We will continue to release findings. These data are publicly available, and so one of our goals for talking about them is to encourage people, if they're interested in using them, they can submit. It's like a short paragraph about what you're going to do, and you fill out a data release, and we send you the file. And we are funding several researchers to look at some of these more in-depth questions that I mentioned. And we'll continue to use it to inform the current and future work that we have going on. So that's it. Any questions? And I just went real quick. I will say we have a couple reports from the data. We have this fog zone that's for the full sample, an older teens report that's just for 18 to 19-year-olds. And I brought some copies in the back, but I'm happy to send you some copies as well. Yes?
A question really about your slide that says, don't think birth control works. When I look at the question, it seems to me there's more than one way of thinking about it. I mean, three that I can think of. One is, I don't believe that the synthetic hormones will stop ovulation. The second one is, I won't use it effectively. And I think
right.
That to the fact that they are presently not always taking their birth control self-efficacy. And the third one perhaps is that they'll change their mind in the future. Is that something that you thought, you know, that they'll become less ambivalent, they'll not become pregnant in the future?
Do you see that in the question? I definitely see the first two of... Is it the method itself, or is it just the users are not confident in, or maybe they've had experience with friends or others who have used the pill and they've gotten pregnant, so in their mind, it's sort of confounded. And I think this issue of ambivalence about, we see from the data that over half say that they think they're going to marry their current partner, and the vast majority of them think they're going to have a child with that current partner as well. So there clearly is a strong pull to parenthood. And so we need to sort of recognize that, but how can we sort of change our messaging to say, if you're not sure right now or you haven't made the decision that you want to be parents, using some method of contraception is probably a good idea. Because if you're not using a method, you're implicitly making the decision to have a child or become pregnant.
Thank you.